Bronson, Billy Porter, and more. That's Wait, Wait from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
There's always a story behind the music, how the song was written, why the song was written. I'm Kathy Geary. Join me for Now and Then. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors. Celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail, morgan-outdoors.com.
Hello, everybody. It is Greg Triggs. It is Saturday at 11:30 on WJFF, and you're listening to Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where are we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
I've got a great show for you today. We are talking to one of my favorite people, a hyphenate, ladies and gentlemen. She has worked in television. She is a stand-up comedian. She writes essays. She has books. She has done so much. It's my pleasure to introduce Mary Jo, as in Joseph, Peel.
Hello, Greg. Thank you for that lovely introduction. It almost sounds like I've accomplished something.
Oh, I think you have. I'm sure your name is familiar to many, many people. In addition to your books, you have had a column in Minnesota Monthly Magazine. You have had pieces featured on NPR. You were part of the writing and performing staff for Mystery Science Theater and Cinematic Titanic. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, your biggest credit is probably theater sports in Minneapolis, basement of Montanita's circa 1987.
You gave me my big break in showbiz, Greg Triggs. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, how we have climbed our ways out of that basement.
I've clawed my way, baby.
Anyway, how do you describe yourself?
Oh, God, what a good question. I don't know. I'm always stumped. Partly, this is a really interesting question, Greg. Sometimes I don't. Like, I've been jumping back into dating a little bit. And it depends on who I'm talking to. Because a lot of people can't wrap their heads around what I do. I piece together a living. And I think it's getting different. People have a different understanding of a gig economy, but I've been working a gig economy like you for several decades. So mostly the shorthand I use is writer performer. Have I over answered your question?
Not at all. I think that, you know, a lot of people need linear definitions for things. And I think, unfortunately, society is moving more in that direction where people are unable to think subjectively as well as they used to be able to. And so I totally get what you're saying. Now, of the writer-performer thing, which one would you say is your current focus right now?
I would say writing. But I'm hard pressed. I think it's 50-50 because I do so much work for Riff Tracks, which is an offshoot of Mystery Science Theater, only it's streaming, and I write the scripts and I voice them with my partner, Bridget Jones Nelson. So that's writing, but I'm always got another writing project, which is essays or contributions to magazines. So I'm sorry, I'm not really answering your question.
Well, we're thinking subjectively, so the answer is a discussion. But I would say one of the things that I think unifies your career is a strong observational point of view that leans towards comedy, thoughtful comedy.
Yes, comedy is definitely absolutely.
So let's talk about your approach to comedy a little bit. How would you describe yourself as a comic writer and performer? How would you define your point of view, or what words would you use to describe it?
I would use the words vulnerability. I would use the words, the word baffled come to mind, because I've always felt like I'm kind of out of step with the way the world works, like everything the world, quote, the world takes for granted. I've never been able to figure out. Does that make any sense? Like, oh, when did we all agree that prom was a thing? And how come I didn't get to go? Does that make any sense? Do you know what I mean? Like, just being out of step for various reasons. I'm very literal. I take things very literally, and I poke fun at myself with that understanding.
I would say that's a great observation. I would also say your comedy is an intelligent innocence in a way, which is not a naive point of view, but I think it does lead to the word, that's my word for what you describe as baffled.
Interesting. I have always appreciated how insightful and articulate you are. May I ask you how you would describe your sense of comedy?
I think it's a kind, biting quality. I think I'm willing to poke at things and point out the foibles of them, but instead of being judgmental, find a lot of joy in them. I think when I first started performing, I was snarkier, and I got a little bored with that. And one of the things that I've always enjoyed about improv, which is how we met, is that I like being forced into other people's worlds or points of view. Sometimes when I'm teaching a workshop, I'll say, I think at the end of my life, I'm just going to be glad I don't have to hang out with me anymore. You know, stand-up is always a little bit of me.
Yeah.
It's a very finite point of view in many ways. So getting thrown ideas from other people has always brought me great joy, because I think it allows for growth.
Yeah. That's really interesting, because the way that you and I met was that you hired me for theater sports, right? Or was it theater sports at the time?
I think it was theater sports.
Theater sports. And I'd had some improv training, but the thing about, I was really shy and withdrawn at that point in my life. And the thing about that kind of theatrical experience is you really learn to meet a situation or people where they're at. It really helped me get out of my own head a lot and roll with what was going on, not just comedically or performance-wise, but in life experience. It's kind of Buddhist.
I don't disagree. And the other thing that boggles me about that time is how many of those people are still on some level in my life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I left Minneapolis 32 years ago.
Oh, I will not hear that. Take it back.
And when I left, I remember we went to a very fancy brunch at the Hotel St. Paul, and it was the first time in my life I was crying so hard I started laughing, and it was with you.
Oh, God, Greg. Oh, my God.
Saying goodbye in that lobby. So
was I crying too, or was I like?
You were devastated.
I'm sure. Oh, was I now?
You were saying goodbye to me and the children we might be together, as I recall.
I was so broke. I'm sure I kept looking at my watch, because you know how the parking time, like once it clicks over 1 minute after an hour. So I'm sure I had an eye on the clock, like, okay, yep, all right. No,
we were so poor. We were so poor.
Yes.
So now talk about how all of this led to your career and your identity with Mystery Science Theater, Cinematic Titanic. I mean, I think, you know, for those who might not be in the know for some odd reason, it's basically comedians playing characters watching bad films or public domain films, or what's the best way of putting that?
No, I think you put it quite exactly right. Interacting with generally poorly made movies. And I was so lucky because, as you may remember, I was doing a lot of stand-up comedy and I was on the road, which was awful because in those days I got introduced as our next comedian is a female comedian. So you were really set up as this freak show and you were in these outlying small towns. It beat a day job. That's all I knew. Right. And so it was a bit of a go to do that. And then I got this full-time job writing on a television show in my own hometown. And we got to watch these terrible movies, which I had been raised on in the days of network TV and late night television. And it really, I feel like it was a wonderful experience, but it also shaped me a little bit where I have no long-term narrative in anything. Everything's a quip. Like I have to really work on creating a structure instead of just responding to something with a quip in a 2-second break. Does that make sense?
Makes total sense. I think about that with improv all the time. There's no permanent record of the majority of my work.
Wow, right.
When I'm writing books, it's like, oh, this is going to exist. I'm going to be able to pick this up. It needs to be independent of me being able to explain it.
Right. Yeah, I'm just taking that in because, again, when I was writing my book, it was hard not to go for the joke, like to really... The sense of humor is always there, but it had to come from an authentic place, a genuine observation, instead of filling in a quip.
So how did Mystery Science Theater and all of its iterations on Comedy Central, on Netflix, live and in person, how has that changed your life? What opportunities has it opened up? How has it changed your perceptions?
Greg Triggs, it is so weird. Like sometimes I can't think about it too much because the top of my head explodes, but it's stuff like this. I'll try and back into that answer. It's stuff like I will get asked to do a convention, be a special guest at a sci-fi or any sort of convention, right? Because the fan base is so vigorous and large and devoted. And if you would have asked me 25 years ago that I'd be flying to New York to go sit at a table and sign autographs, I'm sorry, I'm getting lost in thought because it's so mind-blowing. So it's had this half-life that I never dreamed of. I feel like I'm living the dream I didn't know I had, which is all I want to do is make personal appearances. Well, guess what? I make personal appearances. And it's so weird, Greg. I can't really think about it too much. Am I answering your question?
Totally. I mean, it seems like it's, I always think of answers like that as being radiant, like they just fill in the spaces and take up more space because it keeps getting bigger. So in your case, I would say it continues to grow. It continues to change and morph. And one of the wonderful things about it is just think of what the world was when we met in like 1987 versus what it is now with the internet, with streaming platforms, with phones we carry, with all the ways it changes. But your career, because of that type of media, it's been on Netflix. It's a bit of a shapeshifter.
Yeah. And you point to something else, which is the nature of fandom has changed in accordance with the ways that people can be fans or pursue their interests, right? So in olden times, you were always at arm's length because with people who watched the show, because there was more or less a physical barrier. They wrote letters, handwritten letters via postal mail to connect with you. But now celebrities or people on your favorite shows are interacting on Twitter or Facebook. people feel like they have more access to fans, and the people who are doing the creative work get to acknowledge that and realize who's behind what they get to do.
I agree. And I think since the conversations are more conversational and more immediate, mm-hmm. I think the fans own work or their relationship to work in a different way. It's much less passive.
Yes. Bingo. Well said.
Speaking of bingo and other things from the 20th century, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes to talk about Mary Jo's latest project. So stick around, because there will be more Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, it's a live event with the close-knit food scene of Indianapolis. From a pioneering prosecutor-turned-restaurateur to a pair of young protégés carrying on the legacy of a beloved baker, we're talking the past, present, and future of the indie food world. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill.
Travels with Triggs.
And we're back. For those of you who just tuned in, number one, I'm sure you're kicking yourself. And number two, I want to let you know that we're talking to Mary Jo Peel, who, in addition to Mystery Science Theater, Live Performance, Minnesota Monthly Magazine, NPR, has just written her second book called Dumb, Dumb, Dumb. And it is based on book reviews that her wonderful mother left behind. Tell us about the new book, Mary.
Oh, you're so sweet. Yeah. My mother died.
Your mom's the best.
Oh, you are so sweet. Yes, you and I and she had hamburgers, the best hamburgers in the world at that place in Times Square, right? And that hole in the wall. That was such a fun day. My mother died in 2014. And when my father and I were cleaning out, she had these several large closets, her garage sale closets, where she kept all her finds. We found a recipe box full of 3x5 index cards on which she had written down all the books she had read and who wrote them, and these little pithy reviews. And most of them are ranked 0 to 10, 10 being the greatest book ever. And she read so much, she would start forgetting what she'd read. Like, I would go over there and visit her and ask her what she was reading, and invariably she'd say, well, I'm reading this, but honest to Pete, I swear I've read this before, but I can't remember. So as I was reading through these little book reviews, there are some that just really triggered a lot of memories and a little bit of wondering who my mother was. We had a pretty close relationship, but you never really know someone. Or it made me explore that idea that you can never really know what goes on in another person. So some of them are a little bit cryptic, like one she says, I forget what the book is, but she says something to the effect of, made me very uncomfortable.
The and vibe. Now,
scene, blackout. But you, and I wondered what it was, because when your parent dies, it's too late to ask them any questions, but the questions only come up after they've died, because you're older, you have more insight.
And I think it's also, you know, no matter how much we love our parents, it's a relationship with expectations and definitions. As much as we can get to know anyone, I feel the same way about my husband, right? There are things about him, he's another person when he goes to different places. And just imagine how your mom, the book fan, would feel knowing that this thing she did for very practical reasons to amuse herself and educate herself and leave a record. Think about how much it would mean to her to know that it became a book.
Yeah, I think she would. I think she would be of two minds. One is she would hope that it was successful enough so I didn't have to move into anyone's basement, because that was always her fear, that I was going to have to live with my parents again because of my freelance itinerant lifestyle. And yes, I used to make jokes about her in my comedy act, and I was fearful that she might be hurt, but she actually loved being, and she would tell her friends, she would say, yeah, I'm in Mary Jo's skit. But you explore similar themes in your book.
Yes, right? Which is coming out about the same time yours is. It's called That Which Makes Us Stronger. And I think one of the ways our books are similar is, number one, they're based on the strong families from which we sprang. And also, as you were speaking, I realized, I think both of our books and maybe even our comedy makes heroes out of everyday people. We can see the exceptional in everyday living. And I think that's so important. And, you know, even remembering your mom and listening to your mom, I think one of the ways she aged really well from my external point of view is she never lost her curiosity. And as you know, as I'm getting older, I'm younger than you.
You are such a wretched human being.
That's true. But I'm very vigilant about holding on to my curiosity. And I would say the same as I observe you.
Yeah, I hope so, because I come by it honestly, I guess. And I'm sorry, you said something that really, really piqued my curiosity. Now I can't remember what it is because I'm so much older than you, you know. I know, the making heroes out of the ordinary, because one of the ways my mother described herself was, she would just say, oh, I'm just average. And when I started writing about her, I feel like you weren't average. I think I understand what you're saying, because we have this weird metric in our culture that you're only exceptional if you make a lot of money or you're in whatever. But when I think of some of the things she did without even drawing attention to them, like, Greg, did you know, a friend of mine reminded me of this. My mother belonged to a health club in the 80s, and then this health club explicitly stated their anti-gay biases, and my mother raised a stink and left the club, and she raised a stink, and it was like way ahead of her time, I think.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even remembered that. And this friend of mine reminded me of it. And I think, like I said, Mom, you describe yourself as average because, A, you don't want, you're a Midwesterner, you don't want to stick your neck out and get too big for your britches, right? But you were anything but. So to delve into her like that, did you discover anything? Your book is fiction, but it's based on your real life experience. Did you discover things as you wrote about them that started making different sense or more sense? Do you see what I'm asking?
Oh, it definitely did. And, you know, in my case with my book, you know, when you're a kid, you think your parents know. And now that I'm about the age that I was in high school when my parents had me, they didn't know. Wow. They didn't know. Right. They were figuring out. You know, my parents had a wildly uneven marriage, right? They were each other's best friends, and yet it wasn't always easy between them. And, you know, it's so easy to concentrate on pain, especially when you're writing, especially when you're creating, because that's where the drama is, right? But to really try to represent the best parts of their relationship so it explained the challenges was really rewarding. And there's a part where, you know, my parents owned a small construction company, and they hired a lot of broken people. And I just marveled at not judgmental my parents were. They gave everyone a chance. And you know, as hard as my dad's life was, I always say this about him. If at the end of his life, you asked him if he had more good days than bad, he would have said more good. And really, what more can you hope for? You know? So I really walked away with a new and deeper appreciation of my folks.
One of the things, you permitted me to read your manuscript, and one of the things that I really enjoyed about it is I felt like you really brought them, each character made them multidimensional without, I don't know quite how to articulate it, without explaining them away or telling the reader how they had to feel about that character.
Thank you. I really, and I feel the same way about your writing. You don't need to hand the audience its end game. You need to let them bring their own experience to it. And I love that I feel more and more that way the older I get. You know, it's thrilling, isn't it, to still be growing and taking on new challenges.
Yes. And that leads me to my fear or lack of fear about this manuscript, this book. I don't know if you feel this way, but sometimes I get up in my own head like, oh, what if somebody reviews it and it's awful? And then I remember, oh, it doesn't matter. Nothing is perfect. All we can do is all we can do and put it out to the universe. And I am so sick of getting in my own way about stuff that I never do anything. So I did this. I hope it honors my mother. I think people who are readers love the idea of it because they want to know what the books are that my mom loved and if they read them. And that's all I can do is letting go of the end result. And to your point about writing about your family, I read the memoir, The Glass Castle, because I was all up in my head about, oh, I have to provide a perspective on my mother. Well, I'm not that deep. Like, I'm like Psychology Today magazine deep.
That's kind of deep these days.
So you read The Glass Castle, and I forget the writer's name, but all she does is present events and describe events, and she doesn't offer any critique. She gets out of the way of trying to be a filter for the reader.
That's awesome. What was your favorite part about writing the book?
I think it was talking to my siblings and how recollections are different from sibling to siblings, and recollections change over the years. They lose an acuteness in some places, or they become more acute in other places. I'm not saying anything new, I know, but they're malleable. They change in our brains. They're not absolute. So I think it was talking to my siblings about their growing up experiences with my parents.
Well, that's wonderful. We are almost out of time for our talk. So one more time, just blatantly plug the full title of your book, where people can find it.
Dumb, 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 My Mother's Book Reviews. Mary Jo Peel should be out by the end of March. Right, Greg? Fingers crossed for both of us. And at outlets near you, at the nearest gas station by you. By the artificial roses.
Mary Jo will make the most money if you go to redhawkpublications.com and buy your copy there. Thank you so much for talking to us today and being a guest on my show. And most importantly, I guess, thank you for 35 years of friendship.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Greg. It's just been a delight. Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening to Travels with Triggs.
Travels with Triggs. Who's he gonna talk to now? What's he gonna talk about? Where are we gonna go? Travels with Triggs.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.